If you haven't been addicted to Peaky Blinders since it first aired back in 2013, well, you need to get yourself off to the BBC iPlayer at once and start catching up. All episodes are currently available for varying degrees of time, and I highly recommend you get involved if you haven't already. This season is directed by Anthony Byrne and sees Cillian Murphy return as Thomas Shelby, the head of the eponymous gang vying for underworld supremacy in interwar Birmingham. And I'm delighted to say that both Anthony and Cillian are with us on Soundtracking to discuss the show's extraordinary music, which dares to put contemporary alternative artists against the period backdrop. As such, some of the lyrics are quite fruity. I should mention I spoke to them not only before season 5 screened, but before Anthony had even finished editing it. Should also mention, unfortunately, we had a few problems with my mic during the recording, which we've dealt with as best we can. Thankfully, and more importantly, the lads sound fine. We'll get to them in a moment, but first a word from our friends at Encoda. Now, I bet like me, you've heard songs on Soundtrack and you wish you were able to find the sheet music for and play whatever your limitations as a performer are. Due to the diversity and creative ways music is used in film, we feature so many different types of music on the podcast, making it all the more time-consuming to find. So let me introduce you to Encoda, an app containing a huge digital library of sheet music sourced directly from 100 leading publishers. Now, it was designed to make a musician's life easier by consolidating all of one's musical practice and study in one place. It allows you to make playlists, play offline or mark up scores on your tablet, mobile and desktop, all for just $9.99 a month. But you can try Encoda for free on your App Store today. It's not just a library of classical repertoire. Encoda also offers pop, rock and contemporary sheet music too. Simplify all of your study, practice and performing into one app with Encoda. Explore a whole universe of music. Encoda, made by musicians, for musicians. Try Encoda for free on your App Store today. That's N-K-O-D-A. And maybe, just maybe, you want to start with David Bowie's Lazarus, which featured in the last series of Peaky Blinders.
Up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
Welcome back to Soundtrackin'.
Thank you.
Anthony, welcome to Soundtrackin'.
Thank you.
I'm so excited about the new series of Peaky Blinders. I haven't seen a thing.
Yes.
So I'm coming to this blind in terms of where you are sonically with it.
Yeah.
But this is a series, obviously, historically, that has this amazing landscape of music attached to it. I guess the one thing that you can't change is that theme tune. Think of it as the Nick Cave tracks.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it is, isn't
it? Become part of the DNA of the show, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, it's iconic.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Thank you. start on the music, and when did you start thinking about music for this series?
I think we started pretty early. We were talking. It was part of the first conversation that I had when I met to do it. And then we started talking a lot while we were shooting. We were swapping songs and different artists that were coming up. We have a very good music supervisor, and she was sending us tracks to listen to. But it's kind of, we were compiling a short list, and we had a huge library of music in the edit, but then you just have to audition them next to scenes and see what takes off.
Is it a daunting prospect coming into something, not just to direct it, that's got this, it's hugely revered and adored by people, and it's not just something you're coming into direct, it's kind of, the music is such an important part of it. Is that to have as much kind of brain capacities in terms of how you're going to make it look?
Yeah, definitely. And there is a pressure because you want to honor what's gone before, but I thought it was kind of also important to sort of strike out and bring something new and bring new voices to it.
Are you thinking about artists, or are you thinking about lyrics, or are you thinking about melody, or all three?
I think a lot of the time it seems to be motivated, that's the wrong word, informed, shall we say, by Tommy's state of mind, right?
100%.
And it seems to try and find a tone for that, for wherever he's going through. And this year, psychologically, Tommy is sort of struggling, to put it mildly.
It's dark. He's struggled in the past.
I think a lot of things are coming home to roost in this series for him.
Oh, your northern soul, so filthy and so corrupt, the noose wrapped so tight around the throat. And those sweaty palms that lay upon the corpse like a call to arms, that lay upon the corpse like a call to arms, a call to arms, a call to arms, a call to arms.
We talked about that, certainly, that to try and get represent what's going on inside his head, if we could, and find a sort of a sound or someone that could make that feel like it was represented in the score or this sort of sound of the Tommy's brain. I'm not really explaining myself very well, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally, because that's get to the core of his emotional state and his kind of psyche, really, in a way. Where are we with the series? What can you tell us about the kind of the narrative?
We open on the morning of October 29th, 1929, and the Wall Street crash has just happened. And the Shelbys have lost a lot of money, and they need to go back to the grassroots, I guess, and try and figure it out. And it also is the rise of fascism, so we deal with that quite a lot. And Oswald Mosley is the physical antagonist. And then I think Tommy is his sort of own worst enemy in this. So it's kind of interesting. And I think the character of Mosley, the way Steve Knight has written him, is he kind of represents a lot of Tommy's sort of fears as well. Mm. And so it's quite interesting to watch them play off each other.
Do you speak to Stephen in between series?
He has an end game, if you like, or he has it in his head, and he's had it for quite a while as to where the story will end. And he said this, he believes it should end with the first air raid siren of the Second World War, so that we'll have seen Britain between the wars through the eyes of this family. And in terms of, I like, Steve is such a phenomenal writer. He once said to me, you know, that writing Peaky Blinders, he said it's like spring water. You know what I mean? It just flows when he writes and he goes at it. And so it's such rich characterization. Like, by the time this series finishes, you know, that's 30 hours of television. And not only for the characterization of Tommy, but for Polly and for Arthur and for Ada, you know, they're wonderfully rich, complex characters. So the answer, short answer is no. I mean, we discuss it when the scripts arrive for the next series, we'll meet up and have chats. But I'm always like, oh man, this is so good. Thank you. You know?
Texting each other.
Yeah.
Have you read it yet?
Yeah.
It's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Does he write music in the script as well? Because I know Stephen is a massive music fan as well.
He is, yeah. There's only one song that he wrote in the script, and it was in the last episode, and it was Ballad of a Thin Man by Bob Dylan. So we can't use the original. I really want to use the original. Yeah. I'd like to get somebody to cover it,
yeah.
But we can get the publishing. So,
yeah.
But that's the only one that is in the is on the page.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked, and you say, "Who is that man?" You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head and you ask, "Is this where it is?" Then somebody points to you and says, "It's his." And you say, "What's mine?" And somebody else says, "Well, what is?" And you say, "Oh my God, am I here all alone?" But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Got me a stage that now with like how well you use music that you could pretty much go to anyone and go, can we have the track? And they'll go, yeah, of course you can.
It's amazing. Because I'm such a music geek. Like whenever you meet musicians love the show.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, lots of people love the show, but I
find a new CDs going, maybe you can get this one.
Well, but they
kind of is.
Yeah.
And of course we are all music fans, so it's a sort of, there's a lovely exchange or kind of mutual love affair going on. But there's a specific type of artist I think that works. I think last year it needs to be have a feeling of an outlaw kind of a feeling.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure you've had the experience where you put a track over a sequence and you're like, ah, it's not peaky enough.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to define what that is. But when
you
when
know
it, works,
it immediately.
It's you're going, ah, now that's peaky.
Yeah. The amount of artists that you have had in the past, you know, in terms of, and then you have this wonderful kind of marriage of score and original music, and whether that's reworkings of, you know, bits of PG Harvey in the past or whatever, or composers doing stuff, and then this existing music. Now, this season, you've got a brilliant thing where you've got an artist who's composing, but you're also using her music,
yeah.
Anna Calvi. How did that come about?
I'm a huge fan and admirer of hers for a lot of years. Anytime I listen to her music, I see images. She creates these quite visual, epic soundscapes.
Yeah.
And I've always been drawn in by the images that she kind of elicits or creates. And there's a kind of, she reminds me a bit of sort of Angelo Badalamenti, his music for David Lynch movies. But I got in touch with her through her manager when she was playing in Manchester, and I met her. And I guess, again, it's that kind of outreach that you have.
Yeah.
You just sort of have to mention the name and it sort of opens these doors. So I got to know her then a little bit, and then I caught up with her after her show at the Roundhouse and had a proper conversation about doing it. But I just wanted to use her music. And at the beginning of episode 2, there's this amazing sequence and I used 2 of her tracks and temped it. And when I screened it, everybody freaked out. and they were really excited, but nobody knew who she was. They were just responding. It was Steve Knight actually stood up and went, "Who the hell is this?" Kind of then put the idea in my head to ask her to compose music as well. And then she ended up doing the entire season. No, it was amazing. And it's been a real joy for me to spend time with her and work on the score, and easy, because she has the instinct for it as well. So there was never a lot of going, to-ing and fro-ing. It was more just, it was tiny little tweaks to, but she was nailing it first time, you know. And just going back to what Killian was saying about Tommy's psyche, that was basically my pitch to her, was that I want you to be the voice in his head. And so we use her breaths a lot and her breathing. And it's really, really amazing. Wow. It just gives this whole other layer to what you're seeing and to Tommy's psyche. And she has created that, you know, completely herself.
She'll come. She'll go. She'll lay leaf on you, skin sweet with musky oil, the lady of another grinning soul. Cologne. Silver and America, she'll drive a beetle car and beat you down at Coconasta. And when the clothes are strewn, don't be afraid of the fool. Touch the fullness of her breast, feel the love of her caress. She will be your living end.
That was hugely exciting, because now, having had the benefit of watching all of the episodes, haven't mixed them all yet, but I've heard most of her music now across it, she's sort of become so much a part of the identity of this season.
It's a physical thing, I think. Yeah. Like you say, until you kind of see it and see the marriage of those things together, you know, makes the hairs on your arm stand on end, or kind of take
That's
your breath away.
That's what it does, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's so good at that. It's also, she can be quite violent with her guitar, and so you get both, you know. She can be, she has this beautiful voice, and then she can also be operatic, and then you've got this sort of amazing guitar sound, and then when she strikes at that electric guitar, it's just perfect, you know. And you're watching Tommy and you're like, yeah, this is it. Makes total sense.
I got one more wish before I die. So please don't you stop. No, don't you stop me. I got one more wish before I die.
else have you got in the series that you can tell me about?
I'm quite excited about Black Sabbath.
Yes!
You know, it's kind
back to Brummy. This is good. I like it.
And it's the boys from the Black Country, and it felt so obvious, but it just hadn't been done yet.
I don't know why we never put any Sabbath on it. It's War Pigs, isn't it?
We've got War Pigs and Paranoid. No, not Paranoid, The Wizard.
That's exciting.
Thing you kind of think that they do a lot the time in the show, where they walk in slow motion down the street with the fire and all that stuff, but they haven't done it for two seasons. So we went back and we did that, and we put Black Sabbath on it. It was unbelievable.
Idols, I believe, as well.
Idols, yeah. I mean, we're both big fans. Oh, did you? They're incredible, aren't they?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I chatted to Joe and Mark, and they were so nice. I had a really lovely chat with them, and then went down and watched them. I only saw the first two songs because I was working, but I mean, they came out like all guns firing, sort of thing. Mark in his pants, and Joe just
exactly.
Going. It was so great.
Well, Joe is quite a front man, isn't he?
Oh, he's amazing.
He's incredible.
When I was doing research and I was watching interviews and stuff with him, and he's almost like a character from like a Shane Meadows film.
Yeah.
He's got this kind of sort of sparky rawness to him that you never quite know what he's going to do next, and he's just sort of just like bouncing about to explode constantly. Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's incredible.
I'd love to see them live.
Again, I was going like down this sort of punk rock route.
It's punkier this year.
It's very much what it is this season.
I like the idea of every season having a musical genre. We've got the country theme.
Yeah.
Season 5 is punk.
It feels punk. And there's a lot of stuff in there, but the two Idols tracks that we've used, Scum.
Great.
Hey, hey. I'm Council House of Violet. I'm laughing at the tyrants. I'm sleeping on the sirens. Whilst wondering where the time went on. Scum. I'm Scum. I'm soft, I'm in a long ways job. I am a mongrel dog.
Never Fight a Man with a Perm, which is used at the... They're both used in the finale of the season.
Oh, wow.
So it's really... It's kind of... it's pretty... It's pretty amazing. So, you know, I think they're just so amazing, and they're lovely guys, but it's kind of bringing this huge audience that comes with the show to bands that aren't widely known, and artists like Anna Calvi as well. And it's sort of introducing them to this huge audience, and it's a global reach, you know, so that's important to me.
Well, since we last spoke, Killian, as well, you've become a radio DJ as well. Oh, I mean, I knew you had good taste in music sort of thing, but were you in heaven kind of just putting together playlists to play to people?
Yes, no, like it was a temporary substitution for Guy Garvey because he's off playing with Elbow. But yeah, I had a blast. I mean, you know, getting to play your favorite music and people actually listen. I spent my youth making mixtapes, you know, and that's effectively what I got to do. And, you know, if you play a song that meant something to you when you were like 14, and then somebody else goes, oh man, that I remember that track, and that it's just, I get such a rush from that, you know what I mean? And I love that radio station, and I've discovered such music, such great artists listening to that radio station. So it was kind of an amazing gig. To have.
Are you still, when we talked previously as well, you kind of been involved in this now on the production side of things as well, and what works and what doesn't work, and you know, what artists you want to use, and you feel connected to the character that you're playing, really, but not just your character, all these other wonderful characters as well.
Yeah, and it's been an amazing journey, you know, like it's 5 series, so I've been doing it 7 or 8 years, you know, it's a long time, and I don't know, the show, the way it's very slowly, but in a kind of a really, I think, honest way, become part of this kind of, I don't know, people just love it.
Oh, culture.
Culture, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for. But then the music that goes alongside that, to have, you know, that, you know, when David Bowie said that he would like to have his music in the show, when Radiohead gave some of their tunes to the show, I mean, these are your absolute heroes and idols, so it's pinch yourself stuff, and when it fits. I am a kid.
because that must be the awkward thing when people go, oh yeah, here's some of our tracks. You go, thanks, but it doesn't quite. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know if I've never really. I mean,
I know that's not part of your job, but yeah. But it's, they've got to understand that, because it's like, you know, it's not just, oh, thanks for your track, we're going to chuck it in just because it's you, X, Y, and Z. It's got to fit. They've got to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of material comes in, and we do give it the time, and I, up until recently, was spending a lot of time and enjoying it, but it just got to the point where there was so much and not enough time. And I was still editing, and then I had to begin grading EPs and mixing an EP. And so you can't sit in the edit and listen to music all day. You've got to do other stuff. So then it was about sort of getting a music editor to audition tracks and cut them to scenes and, you know, WhatsApp them to me. So kind of I don't want to lose my phone because I've got so many clips of songs that will probably never be heard. But yeah, you're right. You do try and make it. You try and make it work for some artists, but you can't force it. You know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Yeah. And you know, there's always another season.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that's the clever thing, I think, as well. You know, kind of, there's, you know, different directors along the way of the series, and different people working on music as well. But there's just an amazing kind of thread through it all, that it doesn't feel like jerky, that, oh, it's a different director, it's a different person working on the music sort of thing. There's this amazing continuity almost between them that I don't know how easy or hard that is to achieve.
I think it evolves.
But still obviously having your stamp on it and your input.
I think it just evolves. Each season kind of seems to jump 3 years, and so it feels quite organic, actually. It doesn't, you know, I certainly wasn't coming in going, I don't want to use anything and I want to start fresh and, you know, make it my own. You are doing that, but you can't sort of let your ego get in the way. You're serving the story and you're serving what's gone before, and you're trying to move it in a new direction and make it exciting and keep it exciting for people to keep coming back to it.
I also think as well, someone's missing a trick in not doing like a Peaky Blinders club night. Where I would go. That'd be a great night. Where, you know, someone just DJs all the music that's been in.
Yeah, why is that not happening?
I don't know. Man, we're too old for that stuff. Yeah. Maybe the kids are doing it, and we just never hear
we
about
it.
We
do it in our flat in Manchester. We're filming.
What are you most proud of with this series?
I think what Steve Knight has managed to do every series, I think, has, you go, how are they going to make it more interesting? And he's managed to do that. Every series surprises me in terms of what it's dealing with sort of thematically. Mm-hmm. And I think this series, what he's dealing with thematically, very, very complex and very, very sophisticated. But yet it has all the cool, peaky stuff that people love. And it still has all those elements. But I think he's really like investigating stuff that is quite relevant.
That's what it's felt like. It's, even though this is kind of, you know, set a long time ago, there are so many themes that are through every series that I've felt they've resonated with now.
Yeah, and I think it's done it in a gentle way. You know what I mean? It's not.
It's not preachy, and it's
no. No. And if you choose, you can choose to watch it on whatever level you want. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way it for entertain, for, you know, like mass entertainment. You know, if it ever like is sort of dogmatic, then you've lost your audience. But it's not. Never has been. You know.
Well, I agree with everything that Kill said. Really. I'm just excited to get it out there. You know, I want it to be over now. It's a long time.
It's been a long time for you, man.
Yeah, it's like 15 months.
Is it?
Yeah, it's long, or maybe 16 months, something like that, from when I begin.
Yeah.
And get into it. And
but you've done TV series before.
Yeah, but not 6 hours. 6 hours is a lot. But it's a full season, so it's like three movies essentially back to back.
And it is so filmic as well.
Yeah, it's huge, and you're painting on a massive canvas, but without the budget that supports that. So you're always being kind of creative. And I think Peaky punches so far above its weight. But that's what's exciting practically, when you're actually just trying to execute it. But also then you're trying to take it in a new direction. And that was exciting to have the support from Steve and Killian and the execs. And
yeah.
But at this stage, I'm still making it. It's not, it feels like this is nice because
like
we finished
deadline,
it and we're talking.
It's like, that's it, gone.
The 20th of July.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Well, I'm leaving.
Which will not, yeah. That will be in the past.
That will be in the past.
Yeah, it'll we'll be in the past. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We're
yeah.
in some kind of weird, like, interstellar moment.
Yeah.
Totally. Have we got two more CDs after this? Is that, do you know for sure?
I believe so.
6 and 7?
I believe so, which is nuts. Like, I figured it out. If we do 6 and 7, I was 35 when I started doing this, and then I'll be 45 by the time 7 finishes.
It's kind of amazing, though.
I gave a decade of my life.
Yeah.
But you're still able to do other things as
oh,
well,
yes.
which is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a gift. It's an absolute gift. And no one would have predicted that it would run this long or that it would have this much of a reach or that people would have such affection for it. And it's been an absolute gift.
And I remember when we talked last time and you sort of saying that, you know, way back at the start was Otto who had this idea of, with the music side of things, of kind of going, let's just flip it.
Mm.
And I think you kind of said, oh, I don't know if this can work.
I thought it was a terrible idea to put contemporary music with a period show. You know, when you hear it sort of hypothetically, but then when you see it, I was like, oh, man. But, you know, ultimately, Nick Cave unlocked everything. It was Nick Cave's music that really set the tone for the whole thing and has continued to do it.
This garden that I built for you, they're just sitting now and here. I will never leave it, dear. I could not bear to return and find it all untended. The trees are bending low. This garden is our home, dear, and I got nowhere else to go. So play it on.
Last time we spoke, you hadn't met him.
I did meet him.
You did?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was
How
a little,
was it?
I was a little nervous. Oh, he was so funny and gracious and wonderful, as you'd expect. I think he likes the show. You know, you can sign up for his right hand files.
Red-hand? I got it this morning. It did was you the get first it? Email that was in my inbox.
What can you do?
So he doesn't talk to the press, right?
Yeah.
But he does these. He has this like fan club.
Yeah.
Where people write in letters, really beautiful, heartfelt, touching letters, and he responds, and you sign up, and then every Monday you get like a in your
oh
inbox.
Oh my God, that's amazing!
A beautiful piece of writing, or a meditation on something, or a response to something about art or life or whatever, and it's written by Nick Cave.
Wow, I met him. I did a Q&A with him for that film, 20,000 Days Later,
and
it was an amazing thing at the Barbican. But it was a combination of. Like a Q&A with some guests popping up, like Ray Winston, and then him and Warren and the band playing a few songs in between and stuff. Mm. And he finished by sitting at the piano and playing Into My Arms, which is what my son was born to.
Oh, wow.
And my husband made a playlist, didn't tell me what was in the playlist, so I was just going through, I was like, crank it up. And then
oh my God.
Rudy came out to Into My Arms.
Interventionist God. But I know, darling, that you do. But if I did, I would kneel down and ask him. Not to intervene
when it came to you. Well, not to touch a hair in your head, leave you as you are. If he felt he had to direct you, then direct you into my arms.
I know.
Wow.
And
that's
Nick
beautiful.
Cave came across when we were doing, I went to do like a rehearsal and I didn't know he was there, and he came jumping up the stage. He's like, thanks so much for doing this. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is like, this is amazing. And he was so nice. And I just love that he's hem and worn about how they're driven by just this creativity and what they do. And they're so gracious and generous with everything, I think, as well. It's a rarity, I think.
We are so lucky to have that man. I mean, he's one of the greatest living artists, you know, I believe. Look.
Yeah.
I am now showing Edith my inbox.
From Nick Cave. I'm going to go and sign up for that.
The Red Hand Files. Everybody should read it. It should be like,
I'm on it.
Essential reading.
This is what we were doing last night.
Yes.
He put me onto it.
Okay. I'm telling everybody.
First email I got this morning
everybody
was a Red Hand File.
Yeah. I'm going to go and do it straight after this. I'm so excited for the series. It's really great to meet you and chat.
Yeah, you too.
About it. And I'm excited for this. I'm also really excited about The Quiet Place too.
Oh, yeah.
God, that was a great first film.
This is a good, that was very well sound designed, that first movie.
Not easy to do.
No.
But again, the use of music was just so spot on with that as well.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like a comfort blanket at moments when it popped up. You know, the kind of thing, that thing where, okay, I can breathe now.
Yeah, I watched it in the cinema and I brought my kids and they were like, probably it's a little bit unsuitable. But, it's one of those, it's like Jaws, you know, it's what you're imagining.
Yeah.
So we were like behind the chairs in the cinema watching it. Everyone's like terrified to eat popcorn because they make a noise. You know?
Yeah. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much
for
your time.
Thank you, Edith.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Cheers.
Season of Peaky Blinders, that's Anna Calvey's version of Pappy Pacify by FKA Twigs, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Killian Murphy and Anthony Byrne. A huge thanks to Killian and Anthony for taking the time to talk to me, and apologies once again for the quality of my microphone. The season finale of Peaky Blinders airs on BBC One in the UK this Sunday, with all seasons and episodes currently available on the iPlayer. Get there quick so as not to miss a thing. Now, we'll put up a Spotify playlist for the show via edithbowman.com, which is also the place to catch up with all of our previous episodes, including my last chat with Killian. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And do subscribe to our YouTube channel as well for plenty more content. Next up, composer Matthew Herbert joins me to discuss his latest composing work for the TV series Tempo, amongst many other things. I very much look forward to the the pleasure of your company then.